You've probably had this happen. You start explaining something, but you realize it's not landing. So you keep on talking, and somehow that makes it worse. Now, in this episode, Chris Fenning, the global expert on the first minute of a conversation, will share with us how to ace the beginning of a conversation, how to avoid rambling conversations that go nowhere, and how to reset a conversation that's gone off the tracks. Now, truth is, our lives and careers are built one conversation at a time. And in this episode, we will make sure that you're well prepared for your next conversation. How can I make the first minute of a conversation count?
Well, let's be clear what kind of conversation we're talking about first. So this is really about work conversations or transactional conversations. The rules are slightly different. In fact, some cases very different for social interaction and relationship interaction. But when it comes to work conversations, the things that we have to do to make that first minute count is to answer three questions that our audience has, whether it's a room full of people or just an individual. They are going to want to know, what are you talking about? Why are you telling me this? And what is your point? And if we don't answer those questions, we are going to get that first minute wrong.
Why does it matter? Why do we need to get it right in the first minute?
We need to get it right because there's a couple of different answers for this. One is it's respectful to other people's time, particularly at work. Nobody has a huge amount of time just to allow someone to spend 10 minutes organizing their thoughts as they come out of their mouth. So we want to be respectful to people's time. The second thing is we want to succeed in the conversation that we're having. We want the other person to pay attention to us. We want them to understand what we've said. And if we are giving information, asking a question, expecting some kind of action, we want them to do that and be successful in it afterwards. And if we don't get that first minute right, we pay the price in a conversation that takes longer, has repetition. People don't, we have to end up revisiting things that were previously described and there are misunderstandings. All sorts of things go wrong if we don't get that first bit right.
And that's pretty common in business environments, right? Few people get it right all the time in the first minute, which suggests that this is not something that comes to us easily or naturally.
Oh, yeah. We're never taught this. In fact, so when we go to school, university, and in early in our employment, we don't have clear and concise communication lessons. And in fact, when we start work, we're expected to communicate in a way that's completely different to our entire life experience up to that point. We've learned how to communicate socially by experiencing that, family, friends, social gatherings. And we've learned how to communicate in sort of a work-adjacent place, which is school or university, and we're taught to receive information and then go and do a piece of work. We're never taught how to really clearly get to the point, give a clear instruction. And that's a real gap.
That's a real gap. I totally agree. Do you have an example of someone or an organization, you know, where people do it well, or a leader we know that who does it well?
If anyone's looking for an example to say, okay, I want to do better at this, who can I go and find to watch? Watch the news, TV or cable news. News anchors do this incredibly well. Now, they have a little bit of help because they often have a teleprompter, but when those teleprompters break, they still have to do it, and they write their scripts themselves. So they are very good at this. And the way it shows up is at the beginning of a 30-minute news show, they will introduce 3 to 5 stories, 3 to 5 news articles, topics they're going to talk about, and they do that incredibly well. They tell us what they're going to be talking about, how it might be relevant to us, a key point. And then they move on to the next thing and they've set up what they're going to talk about next. So they're very good at being succinct. So what great, great examples. And a second example, he doesn't do it all the time because he's got a little bit of showmanship and entertainment in him. But Neil deGrasse Tyson usually does a pretty good job of introducing a topic well. And I would caution, don't just watch the first 30 seconds of the videos because there's always a hook and entertainment. You know, someone's created a video to feed the YouTube algorithm and get us to watch. But when you get to the part of a video or audio, if you're listening to that, where he starts really answering a question that someone's asked him, he will give a short summary and then he will expand it in the rest of his answer. And that is a wonderful example of how to communicate well at work, by giving a short summary first and then being able to expand the answer during the rest of the conversation.
He's a fantastic science communicator, and there's a lot we can learn in business. Your book is called The First Minute. The three questions you outlined, is that the first minute or is there more to it?
There is more to it. So those three questions are the first 10 to 15 seconds, actually. So the science behind it, so this isn't just the world according to Chris, there's actual science behind this. In our brains, we have a very short-term memory called selective attention. And it's a subconscious process where our brains take all of the inputs, audio, visual, information, and it asks a question, what do I do with this? And the answer to that question makes a different part of the brain fire up. So if you were telling me a funny story, my brain says, okay, I need to process this as entertainment. One part of my brain will fire up. If you're asking me a question or expecting me to do something, a different part of my brain will engage. And until our brains know what to do with the information that's coming in, it can't process what it's hearing. And it sort of gets stuck in a loop. And this is all subconscious. But we'll recognize it in those moments where we're in a conversation and listening to someone and thinking, why are you telling me this? Or what do you want me to do with this information? Or, oh, for goodness sake, what is your point? All of those things are just the first 10 seconds of that first minute. So there is more that comes afterwards. And in the book, I talk about a couple of different moments that we can control when we start a work conversation to make sure we're not trapping the other person, to make sure we're talking to them in the right way and they understand what we're saying. And then about half of that minute is about how to summarize the bigger topic that's coming next. So the first minute's made up of framing, which is those first 10 to 15 seconds, answering those three questions that we've mentioned a couple of times. And then the rest of the conversation is validating that it's the right person and the right time, and then summarizing the big topic so that everybody involved is ready to have the conversation that comes next.
And for that, you suggest the GPS framework. Walk us through.
I do. So the GPS is, it's a way to summarize anything in three lines that also happens to answer some of the key questions that people are going to have. So let's say, Oliver, I came to you and I was working for you and I wanted approval to spend some money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the right way to do it is to use GPS. Hey, Oliver, I'm trying to deliver for this client. We have an objective on Friday. That's the G, goal. The P is the problem. The problem is one of our team members is out sick this week. And the S is solution. So GPS is goal, problem, solution. And then the solution is, can I have a bit of funding to bring in a freelancer to help finish this work in time for Friday? So I've done goal, problem, solution. What are we trying to achieve? What is standing between us and achieving it? And then what is the solution I'm proposing? And the reason this is so powerful is that if I'd started with, hey, Oliver, can I have funding? Can I have 20,000 to pay for a freelancer this week?
What? Oh, no way.
No. That's a lot. But what question immediately jumped into your mind?
Why?
Why? Oh, well, I need it because so-and-so is out. Sarah's out this week. And I need to do some work. And I bet you're also wondering, well, why is that important right now? And so I go, oh, because I'm trying to do this thing for next Friday. What's happening is we are moving further away from the thing that I need, which is the approval. We're moving backwards in time. And this is where we have these backwards conversations where the person I'm talking to, in this case, you, would be saying, well, what have you tried? Why is that important? And we start picking apart the subject.
Yeah.
And all of that is getting us further and further away from the thing I need. Whereas if I start with, hey, I'm trying to achieve this thing. Here's the problem I'm facing. Here's the solution. I've answered those core questions you've already have. Yeah. And yes, we could, of course, dive into the goal and the problem if you want some clarity. But I've created a forward-focused conversation. We're ready to sort of move forward and talk about the solution.
Yeah. much more, not just faster, but also the probability that I say yes to the freelancer is much higher because I don't have to backtrack from, what's this for?
Yes. So
that makes a lot of sense. Is the framing plus GPS, is that specifically for managing up and peers or also if I delegate to someone in the team?
It works in any direction. And so I am not the person you would come to for relationship advice. I love my wife dearly, but she would tell me I shouldn't be the one giving advice to others about relationships. But it works in those situations. It works with interns. It works in, actually works in social situations as well. But at work, in those transactional communication situations, this works no matter who you are talking to. And I've seen it used from intern to CEO and the other way around, internal teams to external partners or clients. Because we're all human. And we all have those same psychological needs of answering those core questions. What is this for? Why are you telling me it? What am I going to do with it? Etc.
Makes a lot of sense. Yet a lot of conversations go sideways. Often they can be quite challenging. Is there a way to recover when that happens?
Yes. And it's one of the most simple things to say and very hard to remember to do in the moment. If we were in a conversation and we'd been talking for 5-7 minutes and there was clearly a breakdown, I was asking you for something, I was trying to explain a situation and you weren't getting it, we're both going to feel frustrated. We're both going to feel, I'm not getting what I need. Why aren't you understanding me? You might be thinking, why aren't I speaking more clearly? At that point, the thing to do is pause and reset. Mm-hmm. And recognizing, the first hard thing to do is recognize the conversation is going off track, taking a wrong turn. Clearly there's some tension or confusion. But when you notice that, pause and say, can I just take a moment? I may have, and be a little humble. I may have not been very clear. I'd like to restate this. Can we just restart for a moment? Can I just summarize? And then you've got an opportunity for both of you to get back on track. And at that point, you frame your message again with a clear intent and you can summarize again using GPS.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I love that. And you're right. The challenge is not remembering the words like, can we reset for a second? Didn't get off to a good start here. That's simple, but recognizing it in the moment and having that cool-headedness to press pause and initiate the sequence.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of professionals, all levels, spend so much time in meetings, probably several working days per working week. And a lot of these meetings obviously consist of conversations, one conversation, another conversation, another conversation. Often they're not really leading to the desired outcome. They can be longer than usual or necessary. We all know the challenges and the problems, right? Is there a better way, Chris?
Yes. One of the key things is a very, very simple three-part framework that will make almost every part of a meeting better. And the framework is topic, purpose, and output. TPO, topic, purpose, output. As soon as you start thinking, I want to have a meeting, the first thing we should do is say, do I know what the topic is? Do I know the purpose of this meeting? And do I know the output I would like the meeting to produce? And when you know those three things, you have the framework where you can identify what are the right activities to make that happen. So it's not just conversation, conversation, conversation. And I think we should come back to that in a moment. So TPO gives you the right activities. Who are the right people to contribute to this purpose and produce the output? How much time will it take? Am I being realistic if I want to review 10 proposals and I've booked a 30-minute meeting? Am I really going to do a proposal every 3 minutes? Probably not. It also gives you key information to help write the invitation. Just include the topic, purpose, output. It gives you the introduction. Yeah. And then it gives you something you can measure the progress in your meeting. If you're halfway through the meeting and you're not halfway towards producing the expected or desired output, you've got to change something. So it gives you all the signals that you need to make your meeting more effective.
Yeah. I love that. And I think this is spot on. And also your point that it should be the meeting invite that forces the whoever invites to the meeting to think it through rather than just blocking people's calendar. Now, what I've observed is that companies realize this problem. They find a solution like TPO, or they say, you know, here's our meeting hygiene, or this is how we do meetings. But the organization doesn't quite live it on a day-to-day basis because everyone is busy and, you know, these changes and processes, oh, just feels, you know, such a drag. So let's just have a meeting and, you know, let's tackle the issue. How do we resolve the structural element of this?
Well, you're hitting on the core problem of, I believe, every communication challenge that we have at work and out of work. The solutions are usually very simple. But changing communication isn't about learning the method. It's about changing our habits. And that takes small actions repeated many times. You have to keep applying that idea every single day. Mm-hmm. And the way to do it is when there is training, when there is an initiative to improve something, in this case, meetings, there has to be consideration. There has to be an allowance for the support and the time and the repetition that it's going to take to really embed that change and not just give an instruction and wonder why people don't do it every day from then on.
Yeah. It has to start at the top, right? If leadership doesn't live these values or these guidelines, then no one else will.
That is true, but I think we can do stuff in our own communities, in our own environments as well. When I was working in a project office, we would be responsible for a lot of meetings. We were not popular because we would put a lot of meetings on the calendar, but we would also be invited to loads and loads of meetings. And it wouldn't be unusual to have 3, 4, or even 5 invitations for the same time slot. And we would have to choose between them. And when looking at a calendar where there's 3 or 4 invitations at the same time, 2 of them would be blank. They'd just be a date and a time and a location. And when that happens, first of all, that's not an invitation, that's a summons. That's what the court sends you when you have to go and pay your parking or speeding fine. When it's a meeting, we need to invite people and you put good information on the invite. So what we did as a team, as a department, we said, okay, from this point onwards, or from 2 weeks' time, we are going to decline every meeting that comes without clear information. And for the next 2 weeks, we're going to do that, but really put effort into reaching out and saying, here's why we can't come to your meeting. Can you please update the invitation? Can you please fill in these 3 things we need, topic, purpose, and output? And at the same time, I and the other leaders in the department went and spoke to the other heads to say, hey, this is coming, don't be surprised, here's why we're doing it. And so we changed our behavior. And as a result, other teams started changing their behavior. They started including topic, purpose, and output, or at least better information, in the invitations they set up for others that weren't directly connected to us. And we began to have this ripple effect as that behavior became valued. And so people would repeat it and do it because it helped them.
That's awesome. Yeah, if you show people a better way, they tend to adopt it. That's great news. So it can be top down, but it also can be peer-to-peer, right? Ripple effect, as you said.
Yeah, but it takes time. We spent 2 weeks setting it up. We didn't immediately get great results. It takes months. Everything with communication should be measured in small progress over time, knowing that in a year's time, things will be much better.
Can we replace some of these meetings with something else?
Absolutely, yes. Yes. Whenever we're reaching for that button to set up a new invitation, we've got that feeling of, I need to do a thing, we should pause and ask ourselves a few questions. The first one is, do I know what I really want to achieve in the meeting? And if you don't, if you haven't got that clear topic, purpose, output, you're not ready to set up the meeting. The second thing is, do I know what I want people to do with this? Mm. So the worst kind of meeting to go to is the info-only information delivery. I want to tell my team something, so I'm going to gather them together and just deliver information. That's a terrible way to set up time together because no one's actively involved. There are no activities, mm-hmm. there's no engagement, it's just one way. So if you don't know what you want the people to do, think, well, is there a different way I can do this? And for delivery of information, can you send an email? Can you record a short video or send a voice note? Can you allow people to choose when to consume that? Which leads to the third question, which is, does this meeting, does this topic require real-time input from people?
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm setting up the meeting, if I'm looking for ideas from the team, can I actually put a document on a shared space and people contribute ideas over the next 3 days? My wife did this recently where she was trying to get ideas and there was a low attendance in the meeting. So she took all the food that was meant to be in the workshop, put it in the break room with a pile of sticky notes and said, ideas for donuts. And you could have a donut if you put an idea on the wall. And it became an activity called Food for Thought. And there was a different way that didn't involve everyone having to spend 2 hours in a meeting together.
Food for thought. That is brilliant. My take is there should be fewer meetings. There should probably also be shorter and fewer people in it, just generally speaking in large organization. But the flip side for me is that if there's a meeting and if we are together and spending time together, you have your camera on and you are fully present. You don't do emails or do other things while being in the meeting. If you feel the need to write emails, then maybe you shouldn't be in the meeting because clearly, you know, it's not that important for you. Otherwise, you would pay attention. So that's my take. And I tend to be a bit absolutist about this, like be there fully or don't be there. Love to hear your take.
Yeah, I like that. And when there's a single topic meeting, that works really well. If there's a single topic and a single purpose, you can tell whether you're going to contribute or not. And so there should be a point at the beginning of every meeting because things get forwarded. That's the thing. You might be forwarded on invite or somebody just included everybody they could think of. Part of the introduction should be validating with the participants that they're the right people, they need to be there, and that they can contribute. And if the answer is no, let them go. And particularly if it's online, there's no disruption or gathering of coats or scraping of chairs. It's just click a button and they've gone. And then when we've got multi-topic meetings, it gets a little harder because we'll say, well, you know, I need you for topics 1 and 5. Well, then it comes down to organizing the meeting so that the topics at the beginning involve the most people. And that when somebody is no longer involved for the rest of the meeting, can they go? And if they can, great. Let them get that 3/4 of the time back to go and do their actual work and other things. So we should provide opportunities. And this is not just on the leader. So quite often there's this misconception that bad meetings are because the meeting leader doesn't do it well. And I think that's not true. Everybody in the meeting can and should contribute to its success. Mm-hmm. If you're sat in a meeting thinking, I don't need to be here, speak up, ask. And you don't have to be like bullshit about it. You don't have to be bad about it and go, I don't think I should be here, let me go. There's also positional power. You probably wouldn't say that to a senior person. But you can say, hi, I'm not exactly clear what I can contribute. Can you help clarify that so that I'm better able to contribute? And if I'm not and I was invited by mistake, is it okay if I go? Totally fine to ask the question.
Totally fine. Yeah, that's totally fair. And I love how you would organize a more complex meeting with multiple agenda points.
Are you sick and tired of spending 8 hours preparing for a 1 hour presentation? You're not alone. That's why I created my Tactica Guide 50 Presentation Hacks. It's for free. Grab it in the show notes.
We have a love-hate relationship with meetings. We also have a love-hate relationship with emails in business. What are we going to do about emails? There's just so many now.
Well, there is a big question.
Slack, I mean, WhatsApp, my LinkedIn inbox, you name it. Just direct messages from all sides all the time.
We are bombarded. Yes. What can we do about email? Well, I've heard strong and impassioned arguments from everything from burn it to the ground. Don't allow any emails at all. We should go back to quill written ink and paper all the way through to email is the best thing ever. Our like, work and life couldn't function without it.
Yes. And let AI do it.
Oh, that is the worst advice. I will try not to get on my soapbox for this. I have a really strong opinion.
Get on the soapbox. I want to hear your take on this.
All right. So I'm a big fan of AI as a tool in the right circumstances. So there was a cartoon that went around where somebody was saying, I need to write an email. So I typed my line in and AI turned it into a one-page email. And then the next caption was somebody saying, I got this email, so I asked AI to take the one page and summarize it into one line for me. And there's a whole lot of AI and not a lot of human thought. And the problem with thinking AI can write my email for me is the tool does not know what you want that email to achieve. You mm-hmm. still have to tell the tool what the topic is, what the intent is, what your key message or the questions are. You have to put that in. You need to start with the intention of writing something that is clear and organized and has an obvious purpose. And then you ask the tool to help you. And I do this. I'm not great at writing sales messages, and I have to do it as part of my work. So I ask the AI tools for examples of structures, and then I can build my message around it. Or if I've written a message, and I wrote the book on effective email, so I should do this quite well, but when I'm in a hurry, I may not follow all of my rules. Google and Gmail has a wonderful thing where it will highlight where a sentence is too long, and they suggest a shorter or clearer version. Make use of those tools. They are great tools. But always, always start with a clear intention and knowing what you want to communicate yeah. and get the tool to help you do it effectively.
Exactly. Exactly. Don't outsource your thinking to the tool. You know, that's our, because it doesn't, as you said, it doesn't have the context. Now, what I do in, you know, for what it's worth, I'm using dictation tools. So I'm using Whisperflow, but there are others, of course. What I like about Whisperflow, and, you know, I've no affiliation or anything, but they give me a formatted text. So essentially I press one button on my keyboard, I speak, I release the button, boop, email appears, right? So it's exactly what I want to say. And obviously, I can speak relatively precisely, but I'm not a good typer. So for me, this is a big time saver when it comes to email messaging, etc. And I will put it in wherever the cursor is, right? Whether that's WhatsApp, Slack, email, I jump from one inbox to the next and just go through, plow through my messages because I don't have to type. I can just speak it and I don't have to worry about formatting or rereading it because it's so accurate. And it's accurate in several languages, which is really impressive.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so how should we approach email from an organizational perspective? You know, should we block 30-minute time slots twice a day? Should we just do it whenever we have 5 minutes? What's the best way?
The best way is going to be very personal. So every individual is different. It would be, so for example, you said you don't really, like typing is not your preferred method. You prefer to speak. Great. And you found a tool that helps you do that. When it comes to organizing email, how we do it is going to be very much down to our preferred style, plus the culture of the organization. Earlier on, I mentioned the 1 a.m. messages. There's a good example I heard recently where a senior leader sent a message that went out at 1 a.m. And they said, I'm in the message at the beginning. They said, I wrote this at 1 a.m. I do not expect a reply until your working hours. And they were up feeding their child, like the baby was, and so they were just doing stuff in the middle of the night. So they made a point to say, the culture isn't this. I'm working at a time that's convenient for me, but I do not expect a reply outside of core hours. And that is a wonderful example of how you should, like we can work in our own ways. We can choose whether we want to time block 30 minutes and knock them all out and then ignore email as a distraction for the rest of the day, or whether we dip in and out between tasks. As long as our culture and the things that we're demonstrating don't become the rules that everyone else has to follow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I recommend this to leaders to use a how to work with me document and give it to people, because often the sheer volume is just unmanageable. Oh. A leader told me yesterday, I have 1600 unread emails and no system in the world will solve this problem. There's just too much volume. And therefore it's a matter of who can send or should send me emails, how long should they be, and you know, what can they expect in return from me in what time frame. So that becomes an organization problem, but we can solve it with these, you know, how to work with me guides, as I call them.
I love that as an idea. It's so important and very, very rarely done. And it doesn't have to be a formal document. So to the person listening to this and wondering, well, how do I actually turn that into something useful at work? Here's what to do. Write down the names of the 5 people you communicate with most often at work, and then go and have a 5-minute conversation with them, specifically learning about their communication preferences. Ask them, do you prefer email, text message, phone call, Slack message, or some kind of instant message internally? Does that change based on the urgency of the situation? What do you like or not like when receiving a message? And let them tell you, and then you can adapt to fit them. Now, hopefully, that'll be reciprocated and they will ask the same thing. But by starting with 5, even 3, just the 3 most common people you speak to, if you can adapt to their preferred way of communication, you're going to get faster responses. You're going to get better responses. You're going to stop frustrating them. Yep. And as a bonus, there's a huge reputation boost by doing that because you've taken 5 minutes to show that you care. And it makes such yes. a difference.
Yes. And here's a case for meetings. And I do this with my chief of staff or my virtual assistant. I tell them, rather than sending me all these messages all week long, unless it's, if it's not urgent, let's just have this half an hour a week where you just ask me everything. Ask me this.
Yeah.
You know, you guide me. You just tell me what you need from me and I do it there and then, rather than being interrupted all week by like little requests and do this or send me that or, you know, we're missing this paper, whatever it is, right? I much prefer to have this batched and then it can be a meeting and I let someone else guide me.
Whenever there's advice about culture, about team bonding, about relationship building at work, a key piece that's missing is what you've just described. Ask about, get to know people's communication preferences and styles and set up a framework or a schedule that works for both of you and you then have some clarity.
Mm-hmm. Concerning emails, do you have a favorite way of structuring emails since you have great frameworks? Is there one that works particularly well for emails?
Yes. So the frameworks from the first minute are very much transition into the email environment. So one of the things we didn't go into much detail earlier is the first part of the first minute is framing, which is topic, intent, and point. It's the thing that answers those three questions, like what is this? What are you talking about? What am I meant to do with it? And what's your point? So the subject line of an email should say what the topic is and what the person is meant to do with it. So I've got a question about Project Everest, or there are three actions for this client. And in just a few words, you should be able to highlight sort of what they're meant to do with it. Is it info only, or is there a specific thing for them to do? And then in the introduction, you start with whatever your greeting is, and then you do a one-line intro. Hey, this email is about this topic. Here's the intent. Here's what I want you to do about it. This is why you're getting it. And here's the key point. Now let me expand it underneath. And then the second thing to do is if you've got a lot of detail, write a short email with a large appendix. You can say, look, there's more info, there's background below. Thanks very much. Goodbye, Chris.
Yeah.
If your message includes all the detail, people will scan it and go, this is too much, I can't see the key thing, and they'll move on. So the email part of the message needs to be a very short introduction. Here's what we're talking about. Here's why I'm sending this to you, what I want you to do with it, and the key point. If you've got any questions, what I like to do is literally write the word question and then write the question, and it's on its own line. You can't miss that because the first thing you see is, oh, this is a question. And then I'm compelled to read what the question is.
Yeah. Help people with also the visual appearance, right? You say two questions, free space, one, you know, dash, question one, two, dash. Just make it very simple. I put in bold things that really shouldn't be missed, et cetera, et cetera. I think this is so important to understand for all of us. And I think this is the reason why 50% of emails in business don't get a reply, which is that people don't read, they scam. So if you write text that looks like a wall of text that can't really be scanned, what they will think is, I do this later.
Yes.
And then, of course, it's buried in the next 100 emails and we never get to it.
And you mentioned something which is a really, really good habit. In your first line, you said, I have two questions for you. And then you put the questions there. What you've done is you've primed the person to look for two questions. How many times have we sent emails that have got three questions in and we only get a response to one of them? And then the conversation follows that one and the other two are lost forever.
Yeah.
By starting with a really clear statement of, hi, I have three questions for you. Here they are. There's more details explaining why they're important below. Can you please get back to me this afternoon? Thank you. That's the message. And you've said there are three questions. They're looking for three questions and you've made them really obvious. You are far more likely to get three answers.
That is so true. And make that next step really easy, right? Make it very simple, the ask. You know, just reply if you agree with this or just let me know. You know, something very simple. Don't say, I would say, you know, thoughts, ? Because that's way too vague.
And gives
someone homework and they probably don't need more homework.
That's exactly what it is. We make it harder for the other person. And whether it's email, whether it's in a meeting, whether it's in a conversation, we as people have a terrible habit of trying to organize our thoughts as we're delivering the message. And we need to stop doing that. There's a saying I use in most of my trainings, which is 10 seconds of preparation will save you 10 minutes of conversation.
Oh, so good.
And one of the reasons that's...
Hang on, Chris. 10 seconds of preparation will save you 10 minutes of conversation.
Yes.
This needs to be on my hard drive. This is brilliant.
There are so many reasons why this works. And the two that I'd point out is, one, if we take a moment to organize our thoughts, we will work out our message. It'll be clearer. The other person is going to understand it faster. And the second reason that it only needs to be 10 seconds is we think at about four times the speed that we speak. Yeah. So 10 seconds of thinking is the equivalent of 40 seconds of speaking, which is quite a lot of work. Mm-hmm. So we can do a lot of organization in 10 seconds so that the first 30 or 40 seconds of what we say is structured, is clear, answers those questions that the person we're talking to has, whether they realize it or not. 10 seconds will save you 10 minutes. And how many times do you need to do that in a day to start really giving yourself more time?
Oh, this is so good. What's your take on sentences like, I trust this finds you well. Hi, Chris, how was your weekend? You know, should I start an email with those niceties?
So there's a couple of guidelines I give on this is, if you are really friendly with the person, then you can start socially. And if you're not looking for an immediate response, because anything you put between them opening the email and the actual purpose and what you want to do with is another reason for them to say, I'll read this later, because it's just a social message. So the guideline is, the more urgent or impactful that message is, the less you should put at the beginning. And I personally don't include those pleasantries at the beginning of any work transactional stuff, but I will put them at the end. So it's...
You put them at the end. Okay. Interesting. As a PS, or how do you do?
However the mood takes me. Sometimes as a PS, sometimes it'll be a, hey, also, I heard you had your third kid last week. How's that working out? Are you still sleeping? I might include that afterwards at the end. But again, it depends how well I know the person, how professional that needs to be. If I got that from my lawyer, I'd be asking some questions. But if I got it from a colleague or a team member, then it would be more appropriate.
Well, I love this, to move it to the end, because I love this, you know, sprinkle a little bit of warmth into a transactional email. Otherwise, it comes across as potentially a little cold. And what I like to do is make it specific, not to say, I hope you had a nice weekend. Ideally, I know what their plans were and say, hey, I hope you enjoyed the trip with the kids this weekend to this, to the lake or whatever. So I think that just shows that there's a personal touch. Everything else seems to be a little, just cliche, right? Oh, I'm going through the motions, but I don't really care. So if you really care, then I would signify and signal to the other person that you care, and you can do this with something more specific.
Yes, absolutely. And if you don't know, then it's a great opportunity to ask. Then you get into a conversation so you can still learn a bit about them. So building relationships requires a blend of being in person, being on camera, on the phone, some of it's email, but making the effort is what makes the difference, no matter what the medium is.
Yeah. So good. Chris, where can find people out more about you, your books, what you're up to these days?
Yeah, so my books are available anywhere you like to buy books. You can order them through any bookstores. Of course, Amazon and other online stores have them as well. To find me, is my website is my name, so it's chrisfenning.com, and LinkedIn is my social hangout, so come and find me there.
Absolutely, that's amazing. And this is always my final question. What's your best piece of communications advice?
The best piece of advice, no matter who you are or who you're talking to, translate your message so that your key points are delivered from their perspective. That will make the message relevant to them. They will pay attention. They will focus. So take a little bit of time and make your message relevant to them. Think about their perspective and how it impacts things they care about.
That's such good advice. I love that. Chris Fenning, thank you very much.
Oliver, it's been a real pleasure.
Thanks for watching. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Speak Like a CEO channel. It means the world to me, and it helps us keep bringing you world-class insights and guests.